This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Bedeschewski.
It is the Inch Podcast, recorded Monday, March 16th, 2009. It's playoff time. We've got lots to talk about in the conference tournaments nationwide, how things are looking right now for the national tournament, and we'll get into all kinds of things that went on over the weekend and what we can look forward to this weekend. My name is Joe Gladyszewski. I'm the Inch Podcast host, ECAC Hockey Senior Writer, joined tonight by Jeff Howe, Hockey East Senior Writer. Hello, Jeff.
How are you doing, Gladdy?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic.
Outstanding. And all also, right. Inch Editor and Columnist, Mike Eidelbiss.
How's that for small talk?
It's how we do. It's how
yeah, I guess so.
We're in good spirits. We've got lots to talk about. Lots of teams in good spirits who have advanced to their league championship weekends. And, Jeff, I think we'll start with Boston College. It must be March. They're playing well, and New Hampshire's out.
Yeah, you can't really say it any better than that. I mean, you can't say we didn't see something like this coming. I mean, you knew BC was a team. I mean, we've talked about it almost every single podcast for a month now. BC really needs to just win the Hockey East title to get into the NCAA tournament and defend its national championship. That's a team that was on a mission. I mean, it had no choice but to go out there and win, and there's no team that's been better at winning in March and April over the last 14 months than Boston College. So they came out and, I mean, just destroyed UNH in its own building. I mean, embarrassed the Wildcats on Friday night, and then ended up having a 1-0 lead or a first period goal hold up and then 1-0 win on Saturday night. I mean, UNH has been very inconsistent at times. They started to heat up a little bit here in the second half, but I mean, didn't really like what I saw out of them in Vermont the final weekend of the regular season. They let up, I think, 10 or 11 goals in that weekend and split the series. And you just knew that it didn't look like things were really clicking for UNH, and it's hard to stop Boston College when it's a team on a mission.
Yeah, that's one of those things. I mean, we talked about it in a couple recent podcasts as well. Like, you're going into battle with that lineup, you got to feel pretty good despite a sixth place finish, you know, in Hockey East. So,
yeah, and
they got it going.
Yeah, they've got John Muse, who is perfectly used to the pressure, played absolutely his best hockey of the year last year in the pressure games, even though he was a freshman. So you knew that this was his time of year. They still have, despite the fact that they've been inconsistent in a lot of different areas this year, they still have guys like Brock Bradford and Ben Ferriero, who can bury the puck about as well as anybody in the league. And they've got some very, very steady defensemen, even though they don't always play great as a unit. They've got the talent there. So it's and you know, they beat UNH, and who do they have on Friday night? It always seems to come back to BC and BU. So it's going to be a game that's going to be very easy for both teams to get up for. And, I mean, we'll see if BC can keep this thing going.
More so than in any of the other leagues across the country, the upsets were kind of the story of Hockey East, both, you know, the ones that did happen with Boston College, and not as big an upset, I don't think, but still noteworthy that UMass Lowell went up to Vermont and won twice in a row. Not to mention that BU and Northeastern, clearly the two best teams all season long, were pushed to game threes.
Yeah, I mean, there was a point, I mean, I didn't, when I wrote the Gatecrasher last week, I knew that BC was a lower-seeded team than Lowell, but I don't think anybody would have been surprised if BC went up there and beat UNH. So I don't think that was much of an upset. Forget the seedings. But Lowell going up there, they haven't been to the Garden since 2002. They've had some good success, 2-1-2 in their last five games in Burlington heading into the weekend. So now they're 4-1-2 in their last seven up there. They're 10-3-2, I believe, in their last 15 games. They're playing great hockey. They're really starting to bury the puck, which is a really good sign for them, because that's a team that's built on defense and having good goaltending, and if they've ever had an issue. It's been the fact that they can't get timely scoring. And they put 19 pucks in the back of the net in their last four games. So that's a team that is every bit as scary as any team in Hockey East. And then, like you said, I mean, Northeastern and BU were pushed to Game 3 on Sunday night. And it was not – I mean, if Maine won, that would have been one of the biggest upsets that I would have seen in this league tournament since I started covering the league. And but you're still looking at the possibility. I mean, Maine was tied with BU 1-1 before BU kind of went crazy on them. And UMass was beating Northeastern 1-0 before Northeastern took control and then ended up winning in overtime. But there was at one point on Sunday night when I thought to myself, all four road teams could actually win their series this weekend. And it wouldn't have been a surprise if any three of them won it. I mean, the only surprise would have been BU going down.
Yeah, actually the last time that an 8 beat a number 1 in the Hockey East playoffs was a BC-BU series.
Yeah, what, about 5-6 years ago, right?
Yeah, I think so. I was looking at it last night. So, yeah, good times, good times. Any surprise if BC wins it all this weekend?
I wouldn't be surprised at all. I mean, if there is any team, I just pumped Lowell's tires a lot, I know, but if there is any team that would be surprising if they won it all just because of the fact that they haven't been there, this group hasn't been there at all, would be Lowell. But, you know, Northeastern has played well. They led wire to wire except for the final buzzer of the season. They were on top of Hockey East. I know a lot of that had to do with the fact that their early schedule was packed full of league games. But BU has been tremendous all season long. I mean, they're clearly the favorite. That doesn't change. But BC is the defending Hockey East champions. They're the defending national champions. They're 17-1 in the Hockey East tournament in the last 5 years. I mean, it would not be much of a shock if they won it all, too.
Indeed.
Is the fact that BU is playing BC, is that good for BU? I mean, you know, other than winning the Hockey East tournament,
I guess
that's motivation enough, but
it gets their
getting
attention.
A chance to knock off BU there, and I mean, let's face it, Boston University is going to be the number one overall seed. I don't think that there's any denying that. So does BU just kind of having BC? Do you think that helps them keep their focus a little bit over in the first round?
I think it does, and just kind of it's the opposite of what I was saying a few minutes ago, is that you know BC gets BU, and that's good for BC, I guess, in a way that they've got their rival and everything. But I think more than anything, it's bad for BC, just because BU is not going to overlook them, and I've said it a million times, and guys on the team, Jack Parker, they've all said it. If they ever have an issue in the last few years, it's because they've looked past a team, whether it's for 20 minutes or whether it's for an entire night or an entire weekend, and that's when they've gone down. BU is not going to look past Boston College when they're playing in the Hockey East semifinals. So talent should eventually win out. I mean, maybe Karen Millan has a tough night like he did against Maine on Saturday for the first time really in his career, and John Muse could stand on his head, and I think that would really be the only way that BC could really skate out with a win against BU.
I was just wondering if there is some added, I mean, there's not just that, the fact that BU is playing BC, but you know, BU's also got to know that unless BC wins this whole tournament, they're not going to make the playoffs. I mean, they're not going to make the NCAA tournament unless they get the auto bid. So,
right, and
I mean that's good motivation too.
It is. It's huge. And I mean, for BC, I don't think it's possible for them. I mean, some really weird things would have to happen this weekend for BC to end up with an at-large bid. So, BU only has to look back about 4 years when they were really hot down the stretch. I think 19-1-2 before they ran into BC, which they had owned all season long. They run into BC in the Worcester Regional Final, and they lose 5-0. So, I mean, I think if BU knows that if they take care of business Friday night, they will never see Boston College again until the start of next season.
Yeah, Joe Marsh, the St. Lawrence coach, made he had an interesting take on what he said to motivate his team a little bit, or at least keep them focused in their playoff series against Quinnipiac. He said, the message we had is that the hardest thing to do in sports is to end a team's season. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what BU faces when they play Boston College on Friday.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, you can look at that in the third period of a game two or a game three, or, I mean, or just, you know, this situation right here, knowing that they have 60 minutes that they have to beat BC, and BC is going to, it's cliche, but they're going to leave it all out on the ice, and they've got the talent to go out there and score some quick goals and get some great goaltending from Muse. So it's going to be really, it should be a great battle for 60 minutes.
Yeah, it'll be good. ECAC hockey, you know, sends its top four seeds through, which we kind of predicted last week and expected, and they are by far the four best teams. Certainly, Princeton and Union played a three-game series, which again, not a huge surprise there. But Rensselaer got a win at Cornell, which was actually quite surprising in Friday's game. But when you look at that group, I mean, you look at Ben Scrivens and Zane Kalemba for starters in goal for Cornell and Princeton, and they're two of the best in the country. But that they might not be the best two goalies playing this weekend when you look at Chad Johnson and Jordan Pierce out in the CCHA.
Yeah, the CCHA has kind of had they've cornered the market on gaudy goalie stats, I think. You know, you look at Johnson, who faced a ridiculous shot total on Sunday night, and they beat, you know, Alaska beats Ohio State 1-0, and, you know, Pierce goes back-to-back shutouts against Nebraska-Omaha. Yeah. In fact, he's got four of his four shutouts in his last five starts, and in that fifth start, he gave up one goal. So, you know, it's, you know, he's the kind of player that's, you know, it's easy to get overlooked on that Notre Dame team a little bit, you know, maybe in the way that Milan is overlooked on the Boston University team, just because there's so many talented players on that team that I think goaltending a little bit becomes a bit of an afterthought. But, you know, Pierce is, you know, he's right there. He's, I would say, a probable Hobie candidate. You know, if they're going to split some votes among some other guys on that Notre Dame team, I don't know. But, yeah, two good goaltenders. And but going back to the ECAC, you know, we kind of crunched some of the numbers, and you know, the team that kind of has the most, I think, has the most at stake is St. Lawrence, and they may be playing the best of those four teams. You know, I think they need one win this weekend to salt away an at large bid. You know, which, you know, they could very easily beat Yale. I think that. You know, I like the way St. Lawrence has played it really all year, and
they got a win and tie against Yale in the regular season also.
And as of late, I think they maybe are playing the best of the four teams that are left. So, could be. You know, we kind of talked about the ECAC Hockey League and the potential for them to get four teams in. Well, I think it's, you know, it boils down to whether St. Lawrence can win one of two games this weekend, either, you know, a semifinal game or. Or if they lose in the semifinal, winning the third place game.
Yeah.
Which is a good development, because I think those are four pretty darn good teams.
They are very good teams. Very good teams. So a lot of it's timing. There's no doubt about it. You know, let's be honest. The powerhouse teams of the WCHA aren't playing at the level that we saw in 04 in Columbus, you know, when they were all at the Frozen Four. And, you know, you don't have the same kind of star power, I don't think, across the league. I mean, Jess mentioned it in our last podcast. Who do you pick for the MVP of that league? You know, and it used to be guys like Oshie and Duncan and Kessel, and now you're looking at Garrett Rowe, probably. You know, nothing, taking nothing away from him, but it's a pretty big gap. You know, let alone the John Poles and Mark Hartigans and, you know, Jordan Leopolds and players like that. So, I mean, the timing is good for very good ECAC hockey teams, which those four are. And they've all got, you know, big wins outside of the league. Cornell split at the Ralph, which not a lot of teams did. Certainly not in the second half. And, you know, St. Lawrence beat Vermont, he beat New Hampshire. Now, in it, there's an interesting development there. With those two teams being upset in the Hockey East, that probably hurts St. Lawrence's strength of schedule and their opponents' winning percentages and opponents' winning percentages. So that was not a good tournament criteria development for the Saints. That, again, those things you have to look at. We don't want to get tied up in math here. We'd rather talk about hockey, but that's, you know, that's just one of those things. I like St. Lawrence. I like how they're playing. Their top line was outstanding. I mean, talk about setting a tone. They came out and they had 8 points on St. Lawrence's first three goals on Friday night's game against Quinnipiac. So that that group with Brock McBride, Kevin DeVirgilio, and Mike McKenzie was flying. And they're good. And they're as good as any of the top lines in the league. So, and St. Lawrence's defensemen are just terrific. Terrific. They're veteran. They're mobile. They're aggressive. Sound fundamentally. A guy I've talked a lot about, and you know, is Sean Fensel, who gets maybe some the least credit of those, you know, of many of those guys. And you look at a guy like Matt Generous, he's got more points, and Zach Miskovic has 15 goals, which leads all defensemen by a long margin this year nationally. So they're good. I mean, they're built for a run, and the last time they were in the NCAAs, it was the same kind of thing. They had great seniors and strong depth, and that's the model they've got again right now.
How do you see that shaking out, that Final Four? I think it's
I'm
still
– I talk a lot about it, and to me, Princeton's the best team. I think they're the best team.
Yeah, I agree.
I just – Their depth, I mean, they haven't had Cam McIntyre most of the year. He was their leading goal scorer last year. You know, he's played 10 or 11 games, and then he came in the other night and just adds another element. But, you know, if it's guys like Sam Sabke or Dan Bartlett or, you know, you obviously there's Jubenville and Wilson and Kushnerook and these kinds of guys up front who you've seen those names before. But, you know, they're really good. And Taylor Fadun on defense, he's a sophomore. He's outstanding. Jody Peterson on defense was a first-team All-Ivy selection. I just like their makeup. I like their aggressiveness. And, you know, maybe, Jeff, to what you were saying about BU over the last couple years, maybe Princeton's problem has been the same thing that, you know, they'll just have some bad nights and you kind of scratch your head. Such as they did, you know, at the RPI tournament at Thanksgiving time. You know, they beat Northeastern. And then the next night they're down 5-0 to Mercyhurst, and it's like, hang on a second here.
Right.
So, but that being said, their consistency, there have been fewer of those games each year over the last 3 years. So that's pretty good. If Kalemba plays half as well as he did at last year's tournament in Albany, he'd probably have two shutouts.
Yeah, he was good last year. I remember watching that.
Yeah, I mean, so he's the guy that a lot of people remember when you think back to a year ago at this time. Cornell's good. They're tough. They've got a bigger concern than probably all of the other teams as far as a key injury. Kennedy's out. He's on their top power play unit and also on a second line winger, and he's a big part of that team. So they adjusted well and got enough done. Riley Nash is playing the best hockey he's played at Cornell. It's not even close. The last month he's been just outstanding. So to I guess finally answer the question you asked, how do I see it shaking out? I see Princeton winning. I see St. Lawrence and Yale, it's too tough to call, you know, because every time someone's picked against Yale, they've come through. And they've got a special thing going in that room. Their leadership, togetherness, they've got guys from all, you know, it's not like they're just recruiting Canadian junior, they're just recruiting the United States Hockey League. And they got high school kids, they got prep school kids, they got Canadian kids from coast to coast, you know. It's just an unbelievable compliment to their leadership group and their staff for getting that team together and so cohesive, despite, you know, they come, it's even more remarkable because they come from such different backgrounds. So I just, every time you count, you know, you want to count them out, they win. So I agree with what you said, Mike, that St. Lawrence is very good and possibly playing the best of all the four teams, but it's so hard to go against Yale after what they've done all year long.
I think of the four tournaments the five tournaments this weekend. What happens there interests me the most, just because I think it really could go in a lot of different ways.
If Princeton or Cornell lose both, they're probably in trouble. I think if St. Lawrence wins one, they're good. If Cornell or Princeton win one, they're good. The ECAC hockey's best chance of getting four in, obviously with the AQ and three at large, would be if Yale was the team that lost twice.
Yep, absolutely.
But
absolutely. Again, I think
– hard to pitch against them.
Yeah.
And full credit to Alec Richards, their goalie – He's been a starter. He's been a backup, you know, back and forth all 4 years of his career. And he's the guy right now for them. He's a senior, so full marks. He worked a lot with Mike Richter when he was working with Yale. And, you know, kind of, I mean, you don't want to use the words cheering, you know, but you kind of pull for those guys. Good story. So, yeah, that's good. One thing... Is this a Michigan Notre Dame thing? I mean, is that pretty
much CCHA?
That's pretty much what we're looking at here.
Well,
love Northern at this time of the year.
I mean, they've proven in the past that they can, they can get over on some teams, and this is definitely their time of year. But I wasn't that long ago that they played Notre Dame, and Notre Dame handled them pretty easy. I think one of the games was actually like 9-4, yeah. And the other one was a little closer, but still, you know, 4-1, 4-2, something like that. Northern is on a roll, and I think they're, if they didn't have such a horrendous first half of the season, we'd be talking about them as a contender for an at-large bid, but they were so terrible, some like 3-12 prior to January 1st, and it's kind of been the theme there for the Wildcats over the past few years. And then all of a sudden they get on this roll in the second half, and you know, even play well right through the CCHA tournament. But it's a case of too little, too late, and they kind of end up on the outside looking in. That said, I think that I think Notre Dame will be too much for them. The same with Alaska and Michigan. I know Chad Johnson's had a great year in goal and
Ocho Cinco.
Ocho, yeah.
that's exactly right.
He's our guy.
Ocho Cinco.
That joke is. I'm sorry. That joke is probably really old in the West, but.
No,
I get all the mileage I can.
Do you know what? It's never old on this podcast, because if I was him, I would wear number 85.
Yeah, when we talk, when we just talk casually, you know, during the day, during the week, we just refer to him as Ocho. We don't call him anything else.
Yeah, Ocho. That's great, though. I mean, come on. Anyways,
you got to take advantage of timing and circumstance. Like,
exactly.
Just take, exactly. Bury your chances.
Burying my chances.
Bury your chances.
You could have built a fantastic Hobie campaign around that.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Anyway, he had have a grill in or something. That would have been pretty sweet. Anyway,
don't suspend me. Vote Hobie.
But I
agree with what you're saying. Michigan, you know, they're so deep and they're so good. There comes a time when every playoff run has to come to an end, and
I think
Alaska have both kind of reached their ceilings.
Right, and especially you look at Alaska, and I know we've mentioned this on the podcast before. We've had emailers from Fairbanks. You don't give them enough credit. You don't give them enough credit. And yeah, you know what? Maybe we sold them a little bit short. But you know, anytime you got a team that
you're getting outshot 2-1.
When they give up two goals and odds are they're not going to win, that's a problem.
You've got an Ohio State team that had to play the week before when you were sitting at home resting. They have to fly to Alaska. It's not like busing to, you know, Miami. And they're playing their third game in three nights, and they outshoot you 2-1.
Yeah.
And you need a goal that goes in, you know, off the back of the goalie's skate, you know, on a pass from the corner to win the game. You know, those are the kinds of things we look at. You know, fourth place finish, very respectable, no doubt about it. Going to the Joe, very respectable. But, you know, we have to kind of look at style points, too. And, I mean, they've only got about 60 goals the whole season.
Yeah, yeah. And they're going to be hard-pressed to stay. I know they beat Michigan earlier this year. That was in late October up in Fairbanks, I believe.
They got one in Yost.
Did they?
Yeah.
But I just don't see them. You know, Michigan is just clicking. They've got something like 21 goals in the last four games. And
I'm a liar. Those games were in Alaska.
That's all right.
I apologize for lying to you, Bus.
Alaska and Ann Arbor both start with A's. But, yeah, you know, Notre Dame, I think as long as Notre Dame and Michigan get to the championship game, regardless of who wins, you know, they're both going to end up with number one seeds also. So, yeah, I think it's kind of a foregone conclusion, which is too bad because the CCHA tournament is kind of had a little bit of that foregone conclusion flavor over the last few years. And, you know, it's kind of been the one league tournament that's lacked a lot of buzz around it. And I think that's just, unfortunately, the way it's going to be again this year. You know, I think had it been Ohio State and Michigan, maybe you had a little more juice surrounding the tournament. But, it looks like a breeze for the two top teams in the CCHA.
One upset out of the five series in the WCHA. None of them had a Sunday game. And it's Minnesota Duluth over Colorado College, which, based on standings and based how those teams finish their seasons, makes it look like an upset. But at the same time, I think that there wasn't, as we've talked about all year, there wasn't a huge gap from 3-8 in the WCHA. So, I think the Final Five will be good. I think, you know, just like we were saying about St. Lawrence and Princeton and Cornell, I think the Thursday night play-in game is a NCAA qualifier.
Yeah. It's an eliminator.
Yeah, exactly. Between Minnesota Duluth and Minnesota. I got to imagine there was a pretty good run on ticket sales for the X this morning.
Yeah, I would think so.
Because I know I got several emails last week saying tickets still available. So,
not anymore.
Yeah, they're getting.
I mean, this
sniped
is
sniped up pretty quick. I bet.
Yeah, and in the end, you know, this is the WCHA's dream scenario, more or less. You know, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and North Dakota are there.
Yeah.
And then you throw in Duluth, you know, which you know they won't. They'll move a few tickets. And then Denver's, you know, a nice little addition. They're a pretty good team. So.
Yeah, I think people just will watch them, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Whereas
absolutely.
There may be more local draw if, you know, St. Cloud or Minnesota State were in it, but Denver brings the best hockey. And,
yeah.
You know, for a league like that, you're going to make a gate. You know, you're going to make five gates, actually. But, you know, their ticket concerns are certainly not as great as ECAC hockey. Talking to the commissioner, his thing, I said, man, we should have some great games next week, and it's a lot of intrigue and great teams. And he, you know, kept saying, I hope people come out. So, you know, that's going to be the case in downtown Albany.
Well, that's the question. Will people come out for that?
I don't know.
Cornell, I would assume.
Cornell travels. They're fine. They'll bring. It's just, I don't know. I don't know that tournament needs to be played in a 15,000 seat arena.
Yeah.
I don't know. You play it in, well, you know, Atlantic Hockey plays in a similar size building in Rochester. But I don't know. It just, it seems to me that 6,000 seat rink might have a lot of, you know, flair and flavor to it. Like, I mean, then you hear the bands, you know, then you're, you know, bunched in there and it's a little more cozy and has that almost high school basketball type feel, you know,
yeah.
Like high school hockey in Minnesota that, you know, people are in there and it's like, it's an atmosphere and it's environment. So, I mean, you put 6,000, 8,000 in that building and, you know, so what?
Yeah. They get lost.
Yeah. You kind of lose the flavor. So, we don't know about Yale. You know, nobody knows. St. Lawrence, I think, will travel well. You know, and you know what? I guess the point I'm making is that's why Lake Placid, I think, had, you know, something special about it. It was the size of the arena, I think, was just right. You know, just over 10. That's a good size.
Yeah.
You know, I saw, you know, I saw Princeton, Clarkson, and, you know, Cornell, Vermont, you know, up there, as well as, you know, Clarkson, St. Lawrence, which obviously had a great local flavor. So, you know, those types of games were great for all involved, you know.
Yeah, and it's not just for the fans, too, with the size of the building.
Too, you know, it's like these kids are away.
Yeah. And, the other thing, too, when you talk about a Lake Placid is, you know, it's pretty cool for the kids to play there.
Yeah, yeah.
No disrespect to Albany.
No.
But
and even take it one step further, it's cool for the college fans. I mean, you recycle a new class, you turn over a new class of college student fans who are going to say, oh, well, now I have a chance to go to Lake Placid.
Yeah.
I mean, I know if I went to a school in that conference and I was looking at making a road trip and somebody said, do you want to go to Albany? I'd probably laugh at them. But if they said, do you want to go to Lake Placid? I mean, you can count me in pretty easily.
He's stifling something.
It's funny because Jeff has gone to the middle of nowhere, Tennessee, to watch Division II college football.
All right, so you know what? There aren't many places I wouldn't go to.
Laugh at him. I know your loyalty to your school. You'd go see it if it was in Bangladesh.
Hey, you know, I did have a day and a half road trip across the state of Tennessee, which really only takes 4 hours to drive across. But, hey, I went to Chattanooga to watch some football. I'll go to Lake Placid to watch some hockey.
You'll go to Albany. You'll go to you'll go anywhere. I love it. You're a great fan.
I am.
Speaking of Lake Placid, isn't the D3 tournament?
Yeah, they've moved that tournament there. And I think this is the second year in a row it's going to be there. I think they're going to – a lot of people are pushing to make it a permanent site, similar to, like, Omaha with the you know, Division I baseball tournament, or like Salem, Virginia, with Division III basketball. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of predetermined sites for those kinds of events. I think they're going to push for it. I don't know. I like it. That's great. However, the local draw and number one team all season, Plattsburgh, was defeated in the quarterfinals. So, plenty of good seats will be available at the Olympic Arena, Herb Brooks Arena.
Yeah, there's it's interesting D3 Frozen Four.
I think. I haven't looked it up.
I think Wisconsin Stout is in it.
Stout's in it. Gustavus is in it. Hobart is in it.
And Newman.
What a year for Newman Knights. They had Brett Lienhart, goalie alum, plays for the Washington Capitals. It splashed all over the hockey world. Then they make, you know, they go to Plattsburgh and beat the number one seed in overtime, and now they're going to the Frozen Four. I think this is the first time all four of those schools, the first time for each of those schools that they will have been in the Frozen.
I think you're right.
I mean, that's just as a long-time Division III follower, I did not look that up.
I think you're right. I can't remember Gustavus ever going before, and I'm pretty sure Stout hasn't been either.
And Stout becomes the favorite right now. They had a great season. But anyway.
Stout beat St. Scholastica, I believe, 2-1 in overtime.
Yeah. Obviously won the NCHA, I'm sure.
No, they did not.
Who won that?
Wisconsin Superior won the NCHA.
Superior won, wow.
And Superior lost to
the Gusties?
Lost to the Gusties.
Yeah. Well, there you go. A little D3 flavor.
Yeah.
You know what we'll try and do here?
We should
one thing in our
Atlantic hockey, by the way.
What's that?
Atlantic hockey.
Yeah, that'll be great. We have to talk about that. What we have. No, but wow, let's just wrap this. You know, we've gotten some emails over the course of Inch's 7-year existence about women's hockey, Division III hockey. We love it and believe this. Our staff is tied to those sports. I mean, Bus went to a Division III school. I've, you know, covered and worked at Division III schools. Nate very closely involved with women's hockey and his whole family all the way through. But, you know, we have to kind of focus on what we do best. And, you know, we're going to cover Division I hockey. That's what our resources will allow. So it's not a sign of disrespect, and we are actually very interested and follow the games, as you can kind of tell.
Yeah, absolutely.
But maybe, Bus, maybe we throw a little Division III newsstand together this week.
I like it.
We'll get you where you need to be. We won't cover it, but we'll get you where you know, and women's will too. We'll probably throw that on there too. Throw it on the stand.
Interesting women's tournament this year, by the way. That's where all the talent in the WCHA is, apparently. it's on the women's side.
That's right. That's right.
Duluth and Wisconsin and Minnesota and Mercyhurst.
Yes, the Lakers.
The Lakers are, and that's at Aganis Arena.
It says College Hockey America's dead.
No, hey.
Lakers. That's at Aganis Arena in Boston. Atlantic Hockey, obviously the big dogs are RIT and Air Force. They have been all year. Again, just like Northeastern and BU, both of those teams were pushed to Sunday games and came through with blowout victories. So one of the guys, we'll have more on Jacques Lamoureux of Air Force. Many people know the name and know the family name for sure, but he's leading the nation in a lot of scoring categories. It ranks near the top of them. He's a big-time player, and I know Ken McMillan is going to have a lot with him this week. Nice interview. One of the guys who stands out to me is Greg Flynn of Air Force. You know, he's a high-scoring defenseman, and I saw him on TV a couple times. I kind of liked his game, and he's got that offensive mindset. But he's worth watching. He's worth the price.
He's a good player, and obviously, you know, his brother plays for Minnesota, Ryan.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, a good forward.
Yeah.
He's a good player. He's a real good player.
Oh. He'll sign a contract. I mean, he'll play on in the show. Or not in the show, but he'll play pro hockey for sure.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, he's a bigger kid, and I think he goes 6'2 or 6'3.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know how they're going to cram him into the cockpit of an airplane, but
very carefully.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess he'll have to fly those big C-130s or whatever they are, the big transports. Yeah. Anyway.
Those helicopters that, like, haul trucks around and stuff.
Something like that. But, yeah, good. I mean, good player. Really good player. And that's an interesting tournament, too, I think, just because – you know, you look at the four teams in there, and, you know, I've kind of kept an eye on this conference throughout the year. These teams score a lot of goals.
Yep.
Air Force, obviously, RIT. Mercyhurst, I think, might be the highest scoring of them all. And Bentley can score goals, too. So, you know, at first blush, you have to say that Air Force and RIT are going to be the favorites. But, you know, Mercyhurst can score goals in a hurry. And that top line at Bentley is pretty good, too. I don't know what the ticket price is there at Blue Cross Arena in Rochester for this tournament. But if you like goals, you might want to pick up a ticket and check out the action there, because there's going to be a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And and that's no disrespect to the goaltending, because there's some pretty good goalies there too, but there's just a lot of high scoring games in that league, and you know that continued right through last weekend.
Yeah, Bentley might have the best goalie of the bunch. They get to match up against Air Force in the early game Friday. Don't know about TV, but I know B2 Networks has live coverage of that entire tournament. So AtlanticHockeyOnline.com is their official site, and worth checking out. Yeah, definitely. Good stuff. Good stuff. We got to talk a little bit, I think. I want to talk about something that happened at Cornell on Friday night, and I guess carried over into Saturday, which was...
We haven't discussed this, and I've been meaning to bring it up, but this will be good.
It's not good or bad. It's just what it is.
No, I know, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, Friday night.
18 power plays is.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a lot of them. Friday night, Rensselaer beats Cornell 1-0. It was 0-0 for most of the game, and then 5 minutes left. Cornell goes on the power play, and you're kind of just sitting there saying, no, we've seen this movie before. 0-0, power play goal late, you know, play the song, let's go home. But Rensselaer kills off the penalty and then gets a goal with 2:40 left, you know, in the third period and gets out of there with a win in game one of the series. So afterward, you know, talked about the battle. I thought it was a great game. Like, both teams played hard. It was tough hockey, and I was okay with how it was legislated. Mike Schaefer was not the Cornell coach. And while, you know, after the game, media were meeting with Seth Appert, RPI's coach, outside of the visitors' room, and then maybe 60 feet down the hallway, it's at the end of the rink. It's a horseshoe-shaped arena, for those who haven't been there. Is where the officials' dressing room is, and Schaefer came down from Cornell's hockey office and locker room area. You know, comes right down through the bleachers. You know, the rink had emptied by this point, mostly, and was right outside the ref's room, you know, screaming and berating the officials. And then when media moved up to the Cornell, you know, side, he went on a big rant about the officiating. The text of the you know, transcript of the comments are available at the Ithaca Journal's website with Brandon Thomas, the beat writer there, published them. And, you know, there's a lot of things that you bring up. You know, is it the media's job to be Mike Schaefer's platform? Is one of them. It was so orchestrated and so rehearsed. You know, when he's throwing out quotes like, I'm giving you guys great quotes here, and... I'm a veteran coach in this league, and I'm probably putting myself on the line, but I have to make a stand. You know, it was so calculated, and he was begging for a suspension, really, is what he was. And he got it. The league sat him out Saturday night, which Cornell won. And in that game, they spent more than... I shouldn't say it. Nearly half the game on the power play. RPI was called for a lot of stuff. And then as that frustration increased, you know, they took more undisciplined penalties. But it was just like a constant trip to the box. One of the points that got a little bit lost on Friday was that Cornell, you know, for Schaefer's griping, Cornell had more power plays than RPI in that game. Here's the problem, and I talked to some of the other coaches around the league. They're getting mixed messages, and that's what the cause of concern was from Cornell's side. You know, the director of officiating, Paul Stewart, is sending emails. He's showing video to all the teams, all the coaches, saying, you know, this is going to be called when this happens. This is what we're going to enforce. You know, there's pick plays on faceoffs, you know, wrapping arms around guys in the corners, again, the NHL standard. You know, your stick's parallel to the ice. You know, it's going to be a hook. And Mike didn't think that was consistent. And some of the coaches who played the first weekend of the playoffs didn't think that's what was consistent. And he said that having a different officiating standard for the playoffs and regular season is completely wrong. And anyway, that's kind of what went down. He went back. He was back behind the bench Sunday. Sunday's game was great. There was actually fewer penalties called Sunday than there were on Friday. total. There was five minors on Sunday's game. But official numbers from Saturday night's game, Cornell 2 for 18 on the power play. So that's a lot.
That's ridiculous.
That's a lot.
But what, you know, if you're an official, what do you do?
Well, here's the problem, and this is something I've mentioned in the past too. One of the problems. I like it when the same officiating crew gets assigned to an entire series, and I think they do that in the WCHA and CCHA. But Schiff goes nuts. He's getting a new crew the next night. I don't think he needed to be honest with you. He obviously felt that he needed to and made a point. I also don't think RPI lost Saturday's game because of the officiating. And I don't think Cornell lost Friday's game because of the officiating. And Cornell's coaches and players have said the same thing. You know, full credit to RPI. So, yeah, it was kind of weird.
So what's the point of going on a tirade or having a tirade if you know you're going to get another a different officiating crew the next night? I mean, what purpose does it serve other than to let everybody know that you're not happy with the way things are?
Well, that's exactly what it was, just letting people know he wasn't happy.
So then the next night, you know, his team gets 18 power plays. I mean, does everybody think that, okay, Mike Schaefer is the guy that, you know, when he stomps his foot, that everybody jumps? Is that, I mean...
Well, that is a reaction of a lot of fans, for sure. You know, because he's been suspended before, you know,
yeah,
commenting on hits from behind and those kinds of things. But one of the other points that, you know, casual fans would make and people who have watched it closely certainly know otherwise, but they said, oh, man, isn't it funny when Cornell's complaining about interference and clogging up the game? Cornell in the last 4 years has totally transformed their style of play. And manner in which they approach hockey. You know, in 02 and 03, it was certainly, you know, a pretty valid argument and commentary, but they've changed their recruiting, their style. You know, certainly they're still defensively responsible. You know, they're staying above the puck, but there used to be some pretty good tackle hockey, as we like to call it.
We saw one of the worst games in
the history of
organized hockey.
Brutal. Yeah.
And that too was a 1-0 game,
I believe. It was a 1-0 game. Yeah, Harvard. 0-3. Unbelievable.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah. So I'd like to watch that game back on tape.
I wouldn't. I'd like to get that game on tape and burn it.
I just want to see if our impressions that night were as you go back, anytime you revisit something, you kind of come away with a different take. I wonder how different ours would be.
Yeah, I guess there would be some validity to that.
So, I don't know. But just the thing that I always remember about the game is just Harvard dumping in the corner and four Cornell guys lined up across the blue line, just dragging them down.
It was like college football from the 1920s, the flying wedge.
It was something, that's for sure. Yeah, then, you know, the defense would go back, they'd flip it up the boards, get it out over the blue, and then they'd start it all over again. So, that was a good one.
It's kind of like baseline tennis, just two guys just smashing it back and forth.
That's more exciting. Tennis more exciting.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, that's the Cornell situation. And we'll see what we get this weekend. There's four good teams there, and hopefully officiating doesn't become, you know, the topic of conversation. Because the hockey's going to be too good for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree.
So that's all you're kind of cheering for. Again, the best officiating is the ones you don't notice. So.
There you go.
There you go. All right, can we start to deteriorate now?
I'm in. Rook?
No, I refuse.
All right. Well, you know what, Rook? I need you on this because you follow this basketball stuff more closely than Bus and I do.
Let's do it.
And I'm going to go on a little rant here.
I can't wait.
And it's not. Why do people make such a big deal? You know, everywhere, all day today, and obviously the basketball tournament had its bracket released last night, and all this, you know, stuff. You can't turn on a TV channel without seeing, what seed are we going to get? What seed are we going to get? What's our seed? Does it matter? Like, it's not like the number three seed gets an 11-point lead when they start the game against the 14 seed. You know, they keep the teams, you know, the higher seeded teams close to home anyway in the first round, the first weekend. There's no home court advantage sites. You know, of course, there's people like Duke ends up in Greensboro, but it's still not Cameron. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Why is the seeding such a big deal? Oh, there are two, there are three, there are four. Oh, they should have been a one. You know, like, who cares? You got to play everybody anyway.
I mean, in one sense, you're right. It doesn't bother me, but I mean, the argument can be made if there are four quadrants, 1 through 16. So, if you're a two seed, you know you're gonna be lined up on the same half of your bracket as a three seed. So, a three seed, you look at them as anywhere between 9 and 12 in the country. And if you're a one seed, you end up against a four seed who could be anywhere between 13 and 16. So, I mean, there is that little bit of a difference in the quality of an opponent that you're going to play.
But that's not till the second weekend.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
You got to play anybody anyway.
Hey, I'm not.
I don't know. I just don't get it. Like,
no, I
who gives a rip?
I agree with that. I mean, really, when you get right down to it, I mean, you know those 1, 2s, and 3s are going to be...
They're all good.
Yeah, they're all good. They're all going to be better than, you know, than the 14, 15, and 16. And, you know, maybe one or two will slip up the first time around. But, you know, really between 4 and 13 or 4 and 12, there's not a whole heck of a lot
10,
of...
It's 10, but yeah.
There's not a whole heck of a lot of difference once you get to those teams.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's, I think, where the, you know, really, what's the difference between a 7 seed and a 10 seed?
Well, there are a lot of upsets in the 7-10 matchup. You don't get as many in the 6-11, but you can also look at it as in, like this year, for example, Arizona was the last team in. They were the highest at-large seed, and they're 12. So you are looking at, I think, there's another 12 seed that was an at-large, but you're looking at two 12 seeds and then everybody from 13 to 16. So there's, 16 teams right there plus two 12. So there's 18 teams in the very bottom of the bracket who are ranked 12 to 16 who are all conference champions. The only reason they're in the bracket is because they're a conference champion. So you know they're coming from a lesser conference. They're not as good of a team. Whereas if you get a team like Arizona that's a number 12, they play in a BCS conference, even though Arizona's crap this year. I mean, it's a little bit of a different game when you're going against a team like Arizona that can recruit the nation's elite athletes, whereas if you're going against, you know, Southwest Missouri State or whoever wins a conference that didn't exist until, you know, Dell bought the naming rights to it. So it's, I mean, there are subtle arguments that can be made. I don't know. I think you're making a little bit too much of this. I don't listen to, I mean, I watch a lot of college basketball. Maybe I just tune the people out when they're talking about these seeding arguments.
Yeah, well, you cheer for the best teams, so you don't care.
Yeah, there you go.
You pick the one seed, and then you bandwagon them. So.
That's right. I'm a front runner. Whoever gets me paid.
That's right.
To me is the fact that, like, the hockey seeding. You know, BU, sure. Notre Dame, sure. Those two seeds matter because of the CHA and Atlantic Hockey tournament.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, Holy Cross says not so fast, my friend. And... You know, I don't know. Just like how many three seeds have gone to the, I think like four total in the last 2 years have gone to the Frozen.
Well, Notre Dame was a four last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, last year, weren't there three threes and a four?
No, Michigan was a one.
Michigan was good. Yeah, they won Albany. They're good. But, you know, it's just like, there you go. I don't know. So maybe I'm skewed because of the hockey thing. But.
Well, and I think it matters a little bit more in hockey, too, because you can have, you know, you can be a Denver and end up getting sent all the way to Worcester as a one seed. You know, sure, you're the one seed, but, you know, you might end up playing a BU or a BC or a New Hampshire and Worcester, where technically that's not going to be an advantage.
Mm, yeah.
So I think maybe in hockey it plays a little bit more of a role just because of, you know, it's a smaller pool. And, you know, as you mentioned, the Bemidji State, and, you know, theoretically the top two seeds should have an advantage over the CHA and Atlantic Hockey qualifier. But
right. I don't know.
I agree. No, I agree.
You got to beat everybody. Just put them on the line. You know, just put them on the line and don't get all jammed up about who's a two versus who's a three and who's a five versus who's a six. Just play them.
I mean, I think it's interesting to see where teams are put and, you know, the logic behind how teams end up here versus, you know, another team at, you know, how Memphis ends up as a two, whereas, you know, Connecticut ends up as a one and that type of thing. But, you know, in this, to me, you know, it takes away from those conference tournaments, you know, and there was some pretty amazing thing, you know. You couldn't escape basketball on TV this weekend. You know, every time you flipped on the tube, there was basketball somewhere, and there were some pretty interesting things that went on in those conference tournaments, but yet it was all lost because, you know, you think about a team, you know, you think about that six overtime game of, you know, between Syracuse and Connecticut, and, you know, rather than talking about how great of a game it was and how, you know, how unbelievable some of the individual efforts were in that game, the residue of that game is, well, you know, I think Connecticut can still hold on to their one seed. Well, you know what, that's not...
Yeah, that's not why we're here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a great game between, you know, two teams.
Yeah.
The good folks at some book publishing company that I don't know the name of, and apparently it's a book publishing company that did not go bankrupt, which I thought all of them did 6 months ago, but maybe that's just me, sent me Seth Davis's book a few weeks ago called When March Went Mad, and it kind of looks back at the 1979 NCAA championship game between Larry Bird's Indiana State team and Magic Johnson's Michigan State team, and how that game turned this NCAA tournament into, you know, what it is today. So once I get through that, I'll answer your question for you, Gladdy.
I watched that game. I remember that vividly.
I wasn't even thought of at that point.
We still aren't thought of.
Yeah. Well, this is true. That's
I remember that was the first.
Is that your earliest major sports memory? No, you're older than that.
No, my earliest major sports memory. Where's Puck when I need him? It's actually the NFC Championship game. I want to say it was maybe 75.
Vikings
Cowboys when the referee got hit in the head with the empty bottle of whiskey from the upper deck.
Nice.
Yeah.
That had to hurt.
Yeah. That had to hurt.
Yeah. That's my earliest. I can vaguely remember watching like a Cincinnati Oakland World Series in 74, but you know it doesn't stick.
Yeah, mine is the actually the Miracle Game 80.
Yeah, I was in fifth grade, so that's pretty vivid.
Yeah, I was not.
Plus, you know, people from your hometown are on the team that sort of sticks too.
Yeah. Your guys are pretty invested out there.
See, you see it, you know, after the U.S. team won, you know, the Bill Baker, who was on that team from Grand Rapids, Minnesota, comes to the elementary school and shows you
brings his gold medal.
Yep. Yeah. Not only did he bring the gold medal, but he was wearing the official, you know, the tracksuit that they were all wearing.
Blue tracksuit, yeah.
Yeah, on the podium there.
Nice.
So.
There you go.
Good times.
Yeah, good times.
Speaking of which, we're
not going to ask you what yours is.
Yeah. His earliest sports memory?
I'm going to ballpark it at...
Probably Tony Eason.
No way.
Oh, come on now.
He was born in 85.
83.
Yeah. Then it has to be Buckner.
No. In all honesty, I remember one of my first memories as, you know, a child, even though I was three, and, you know, it could be even skewed a little bit, were just, like, the party that was happening at my house that night,
yeah.
And my parents basically sending me away and up into my bed or whatever, probably for that game. I don't remember any details of the game, obviously. I was 3 years old. Probably one of the early 90s Super Bowls, I would have to say, was my first sports memory.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember my first time at Fenway, which is probably somewhere around the same time.
Yeah. Mine's different, like, in terms of what I vividly remember and, you know, but just the first, like, sports I can remember, like, make sure you watch this was that game.
Yeah.
My dad, like, sat me down and he goes, you gotta watch this.
Take copious notes. There will be a quiz.
Yeah, this is pretty important. And then, you know, at the same time, actually the same era, was watching Hockey Night in Canada, like every Saturday. I can't say it. I specifically remember watching the Islanders or Nordiques or Canadians, but I just remember every Saturday was Hockey Night. It was good.
I do remember vividly watching was it the 91 NLCS when Sid Bream came sliding home?
That was 92.
92. Glad he knows that one. Yeah.
I'm on that. That's my most shameful sports memory. Is it when Bobby didn't pinch hit for Steve Avery in the seventh? I gave up. I said, you're junk. I threw something and went to bed. Then I turned on Good Morning America the next day and said, woohoo, we're going to the World Series.
That was 92?
Yeah.
Well, and they lost to Toronto?
Toronto, yeah. Killed us. Well, it was six games. But...
Joe Cotta.
Well, strangely enough, actually, mine was more Winfield.
Oh.
And Jack Moore. Oh. Yeah, Jack Morris again.
Yes, Jack Morris again.
Son of a gun. owns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Strangely enough, I was leaving for a school field trip to go to Canada that next morning. And that's a little bit of the reason why I didn't went to bed, besides being pissed at Bobby.
Did you wear a Braves hat?
Hell yeah.
They stopped you at the border?
Yeah, I was on a bus. No. We're in Stratford, Ontario.
Are you going to the
Shakespeare Festival? Yeah, that's exactly. You got it, pal.
The fact that I know that is terrible.
It's for our friends north of the border. Listen to the Inside College Hockey Podcast.
Yeah, shout out.
Yeah. So
here's another, going way back to college basketball. I was going to say, do you realize there are four postseason college basketball tournaments?
Yeah, you told me today.
We talked about this earlier today. Rook, do you realize this?
I thought there were three. I didn't know there were four.
No, there's a fourth now.
There's like three NITs.
There's an NIT, the NCAA, obviously, and then there's something college basketball invitational.
Brutal.
And then a collegeinsider.com
thing.
Something or other.
So, wait, can we start, like, the InsideCollegeHockey.com NIT College Hockey Tournament?
We could.
Tell you what, we get some good teams there.
This year you would.
Yeah.
You could get BC, Wisconsin,
Miami,
College, Lowell.
Yeah.
Miami's in, to be honest with you.
No, they're not.
I'll save that for later in the week, but, yeah, I think they're in.
They're not in.
I did some numbers.
You crunched some numbers?
I crunched.
Aren't they the team that's watching St. Lawrence closest?
Well, yeah, I think they are a little bit. But, you know, the real wild card in all of this is Minnesota. If Minnesota wins two games, I think they're in.
You think Miami's in?
I think Minnesota's in if they win two games.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the last, you know, actually the real wild card in all this is Boston College. I mean, talk about coming full circle.
Yeah,
discussion.
He's got to get
an
AQ, yeah.
Yeah, if BC win, you know, everybody is rooting against BC.
And Lowell.
Yeah, yeah.
And Lowell. To a lesser extent, I think. I think
BC is a national power. You're going to get everybody rooting against BC no matter what. But obviously more so when...
Yeah, not only because it's going to cost an at-large spot to the tournament, right. But also because they might have to play them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah, it'll be good.
But anyways...
One other point I want to make, for the, you know, kind of back in the college hockey and the seeding and things like that. I am A-okay with Vermont and New Hampshire sitting tight and probably both getting in.
Yeah.
I value the regular season, and they did enough, I think. Certainly Vermont did.
Definitely Vermont, but... I mean, right now, we talked about this earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want, you can't diminish the value of the regular season. You can't say that the games in October are not important because, you know, they obviously are. And that would, well, whatever. I've made my point with that. But if you want the 16 best teams in the country right now, then you put Lowell in over UNH. Maybe you put BC in over UNH. I mean, I know, obviously, BC made its case last weekend, but... I don't think you use one weekend to judge that, but Lowell has done everything over the last 2 months or so to...
Well, so has Northern Michigan, but the season's not 2 months.
Right.
No, I know. So, yeah, I'm okay with it.
With the system they use now, they take all that... All that is put is set aside. It's, you know, it's strictly numbers now, and... You know, the numbers don't
that's
look
what
at.
They wanted.
That's, yeah, they
coaches
didn't want.
Coaches vote on that in Naples. They said, this is the system we want, and that's what they got. So there you go.
And I'm not necessarily a fan of it. I think it serves the purpose to a certain point, but I think when you get down to the last, you know, like Wisconsin, for example, Wisconsin shouldn't have been in the NCAA tournament last year.
That's correct.
Even though they beat Denver in the first round, I mean, at Kohl Center.
Yeah.
Wisconsin, but, you know, Denver was the number one seed, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
So, you know, sub 500 Wisconsin team, but that's what the number said. That's where I think we're, you know, I think the system could be tweaked a little bit to allow for some discretion, but that's just me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you and I have talked about it. We're okay with hockey people sitting around making hockey decisions. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I am. I am too.
So, anyway, but that's not what the coaches want, so... That's what it is, and because of that, you have to look at November and October and December. You have to. So that's about it. Anything else? Last call. Last call. Hello.
No.
Well, I think we talked about how good the BUBC game is going to be.
Yes.
On Friday night, I don't want to downplay how good the Lowell Northeastern game should be.
Oh, it's going to be a war.
You could definitely get one of those slow types of games because they're both very good defensively and they grind it out in the corners a lot. But just aside from that, you've got hands down the two most physical teams in Hockey East going against each other. You know, aside from everything that's at stake, it's going to make for great entertainment, and I think it's going to be a great, great game. I have no idea who's going to win that game.
Yeah, I would agree, though. I mean, you say it might be a slow game. I don't know if it kind of sells a little bit short. I think
chances will be down, but
chances will be down, but people are going to get there's going to be a lot of hitting. Let's put it that way. Yeah. That's probably better.
Exactly. There's going to be.
What do you think of that, Rook? What do you think of the kid Tuckerman for Northeastern?
He's pretty damn good.
I liked him.
He
was good this weekend.
Yeah, he was.
Tuckerman, Quayler, McLeod, I mean, they've got
Yeah.
They've got some talented forwards. Janand, no doubt about Janand, Vitaly.
Yeah.
They've got some extremely talented forwards who don't get enough credit. They're so does Lowell. Lowell has some extremely talented forwards like Scott Campbell and Ben Holmstrom and Mark Robitaille and Mike Pitako. And, I mean, it's going to be...
Mighty Taco.
I ordered that yesterday at Taco Bell.
Yeah, how'd your stomach feel after?
Mighty.
That's actually a chain. There's Mighty Taco. It's in Buffalo.
Is there?
Yeah. It's in Buffalo.
And what's the kid's name?
Mike Pitako.
He should do some commercials.
Should. Let's ask Willis McGahee what he thinks about Buffalo.
Let's ask T.O. what he thinks about Buffalo. I'll tell you what he thinks. Super Bowl.
He's probably going to say, get your Mighty Taco ready.
He's a man.
But no, I think, though, the physicality of that first game is going to put the winner of it at a pretty good disadvantage on Saturday night, just because they're probably going to be pretty beat up.
Is that the late game?
No, it's the first game. So...
Huh. Okay.
Which is weird. I mean, I'm pretty sure the one seed tends to get
TV.
Yeah.
Hey, TV.
Yeah. No, and there's no question about that. But I think the one seed tends to get the 5 o'clock game, and has in recent history. And now you got BU and BC who could potentially be waiting around for an extra 3 hours because
and then playing on short rest.
Yeah. Well, not I. Plus, the quality of the hockey could go down, too. But, well, I mean, either way, I think if BU's the clear favorite this weekend. But if BC beats BU, I mean, how many people are going to go to the rink on Saturday night thinking BC's probably going to win, no matter who they end up facing? But throw in the fact that it's going to be one of the most physical games of the year between Northeastern and Lowell, and I mean, it's just I'd be very surprised if Northeastern or Lowell ended up as the champion because of all those factors.
Yeah, look into that for me, Rook. I'm curious.
What?
Did Nesson make that call? Does Joe Britannia, Hockey East Office, make that call on game times?
I'm going to send Pete an email. I got to
Do that.
I wanted to ask Pete a question about something anyway. So
yeah, that'd be interesting.
I'm gonna say that BC wins the whole thing.
It's a whole weekend.
Yep.
I'd still take Lowell. I'd take BU.
I was gonna say what?
I would take this is like Tiger in the Masters. Will you take Tiger? Or will you take the field? This is BU is or the Tiger. Field. I'd take BU.
Yeah.
They're good.
I know they're good, and I feel about BC the same way I feel about North Dakota. Just don't bet against them.
They have it.
Yeah,
they do have it.
Not gonna get an argument here.
Yeah, that'll be good, man. Can't wait to watch.
Yep, I'm ready. Let's play now.
Excited.
Let's drop them. Okay, that'll do it for the latest Inch podcast. Appreciate you listening. It's a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com, and be sure to check in. We'll be at all 5 tournaments on the scene this weekend. Enjoy the games, and enjoy the coverage this week.